kids. It's time to get some SML podcast all up in that.
What's up, everyone? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Fun show. Later on in the episode, we're going to be talking with three of the people from the Travelers with Materia Collective. Fun hour-long chat talking about all kinds of good music and listening to all kind of good music and music because it's music. But we're kicking things off with some reviews. And Purnell, you are here to start the show. How are you doing, man?
Music.
A lot of music, man. Lots.
I'm just laughing. You're like, got some music. I'm going to drink some music. And maybe if you're lucky, we're going to make a music casserole. Going to be good.
Could be good. But you ready to talk about games?
Let's get down to business, friend.
Cool. We're starting off with Demon Gaze 2, developed by Kadokawa Games and Experience, published by NIS America. It released November 14th on PS4 for $49.99, on the Vita for $39.99. Magnestar has spellbound the people of Asteria into obeying him. As the revolutionist party attempts to overthrow him, it's up to you, the Demon Gazer, to wield the power of demons, liberate Asteria's citizens, and shine the light of revolution. Purnell, tell me about Demon Gaze 2.
Well, I guess I'm going to come at this from a different specific angle. So, Demon Gaze 1 is a thing that exists, and it is an awesome game. If you have not heard of it, hopefully you will go back into a previous episode, because I'm assuming that you've been able to review that at some point, and they should check it out. But I'm going to talk about the game and also try to maybe reference some differences between the two to kind of give people an understanding of what's changed. So Demon Gaze 2 starts out with you waking up in a castle with a rando NPC, and that NPC is kind of guiding you to trying to find a way out of the castle, or at least find your way back to a wandering party. And this is meant to kind of give you familiarity of, like, here's how it feels to walk around the dungeon, manipulate switches to open doors and things of that nature. And similarly to the very first Demon Gaze, it eventually crescendos to a battle with a weird character who turns out to be a gasp demon. And it's like the tutorial fight of the game, but also leads you to basically conquering your first demon, which will be then when the character learns that he has the power of the Demon Gaze. So the story essentially boils down to two things. You learning why you have the power of Demon Gaze. And two, using the power of the Demon Gaze to assist the revolution with taking down Magistar, as Joe said earlier in the show. So this is done through typical RPG-style combat. So unlike the first Demon Gaze game, one thing they changed is that now when you start the game, you create your Demon Gaze leader, and you have to choose an alignment, good, neutral, or evil. That alignment affects what skills you can learn in the game, and also sort of affects how you do some fusions with some of your demons later in the game, which I will get to. So that means if you go as the as an evil character, you will get access to more, I guess, aggressive abilities throughout your tree of growth, which is called liberty skills in this game. So neutral is a mixture of defense and attack, and good is primarily defensive-based abilities. So when you take out your first demon in the game, the previous game was designed in a sense where when you took out demons, you kind of had them in a sort of queue that you could pile on as an additional combatant in addition to your four party members that you made through party creation. But in this game, they actually scrapped party creation, something that back in the day was not normal, or it was normal, but in this day, it actually feels weird because most dungeon crawlers nowadays are create your party, explore, fill in the map, but now, instead of that, they scrapped the sub-demon thing, and now the demons are your party members. So as you beat demons in the game, they will join your party through the power of the Demon Gaze. They become not subservient to you, but they become sort of friendly to you, sort of like your friends and your allies in the game. And while some might not like that, I personally thought that was an awesome change, because by them doing that, it allows the demons to have more of a characterization. They can actually do more with them as far as like writing goes. It's not just some faceless people walking around with you. Now you have actual characters, structured characters. So that lends itself to a nice little element where like you can actually socialize with the demons more and learn more about them and have events with them, which is really cool, I thought. So with that in mind, these demons all kind of carry traits related to sort of archetypes of, I guess, like classes. Like you might have like the paladin character type, but they might mix it up a little bit. Like the paladin character might also have a little bit of an offensive grip to them, so they can actually do a little bit of damage. They're not just there to soak up damage like a sponge. They each have different characteristics, and there's like a front line and a back line, so it's up to you to properly assess what row that character best suits to sits with, and also determine what abilities you should give them as far as their liberty skills go to best suit your playstyle. Also, there is additional customization in the form of something called an artifact. These are items that work like accessories, but they actually contain abilities that you can also gain through leveling up, in some cases in which you cannot. So when you equip a character with an ability, they get it. And there is no restriction based on class. So it befalls to you to decide which character stat build and growth best suits which accessories to give them so they can have additional skills that makes them further customizable and unique only to you that your friends did not do. So it's a cool concept. And whereas in a lot of games, the dungeon crawling elements, the idea is like you start a dungeon, okay, the goal is to get to the end, fight the boss, the end, traverse it to find the exit. In this game, the Demon Gaze series as a whole, I guess, there's a little bit of a different element. So in these games, the dungeons are multiple sections, and the goal is not to get to the quote-unquote end, but to find multiple, I guess, say, power points. They are called demon circles. And the goal is you take relics called, I just call them crystals, honestly. I don't know what the heck. Gems. There we go. Let's go with that. You take these gems, which are some related to different types of equipment, like swords or katanas or helmets or armor, and you get to a demon circle and you, select these items, up to three, and you infuse them into the demon circle, which summons monsters. You kill the monster that you summon, and you get equipment related to the gear that you just, the circle gems that you put on. So that's a good way to get both common items and also unique items, which is like one of any type in the game that you can get, and they rank from like F to like S. So higher the rank, the higher you can level up, and the more power it has. But once you take a demon circle, that diverts the power from the demon that controls the environment to you. And once you can, once you've captured enough of these circles, you'll summon down the area's demon boss, who you then have to kick the tar out of, which then makes them join your party, which then allows you to grow. It's honestly surprisingly fun element to gameplay, and it is also why I actually platinumed the first game. Something that Joe could probably attest to. I rarely do.
Oh man.
But with Demon Gaze 1, I wanted to platinum it, and this is going to be a game where I'm pretty sure I'm going to platinum it as well, because it's just that kind of a game. I love it.
So it holds up well to the first game?
I honestly, for now at least, think it's better than the first game. Like, it's more of what you like, but they made some subtle changes that give it more personality. And I also like the fact that it follows, I don't know, maybe something happens at the end that makes it even more concrete, but it definitely seems like it follows the first game. Not so much that if you didn't play the first game, you can't enjoy this one. Though let's be blunt. If you want to play this game, you should totally play the first one, too. Because why would you not? But it has elements of the first game that you can tell it's like a direct sequel. But you don't 100% know certain elements. Like, how far in the future is this game? Or where some characters, but some characters being? Why are some characters here, but others aren't? Things like that. So there's an air of mystery that just implies, like, why are things like they are? Why are these guys here? And it makes me interested in finding out where they come from and why they're there. So it's just a good game. Like, it's a genuinely fun game, and one that I already feel like I can recommend if you're a fan of dungeon crawlers, especially, mostly specifically, let's be honest. And even if you're not, honestly, because this feels a little bit different in some respects to them. So I feel like even then it might be worth trying it to kind of see if maybe this will be the game that gets you interested in dungeon crawlers. It could be the one.
An experience makes great dungeon crawlers the way it is.
Yeah, they do. Oh, and I forgot to mention, if you're a novice too, the game has like 5 difficulty levels, which can be changed at will. When you do it, it makes enemies harder to beat, but I believe it also increases the likelihood of getting good loot. So there are rewards to having a higher difficulty set, but if you don't want to have the difficulty set higher, you really won't miss those rewards because you won't need them. You won't care, It's like, well, I don't have this grade S sword, but the enemies you fight don't require any grade S sword, so what do you care? You're just here to enjoy the game and have fun. Yeah. So it's a good entry level, and like you said, experience just makes great dungeon crawlers. So
indeed. So I guess the only question left, $40 on Vita, $50 on PS4. Give us the verdict.
If you are familiar with dungeon crawlers and you like them already, this is a good buy. But if goodbye, but if
fine,
you
fuck
are,
you, click.
Get out. But if you like, if you're not sure about dungeon crawlers or you're looking to kind of get a dabble taste, this is still a worthy try. And you can always start with Demon Gaze 1 on the cheap. So I'm betting you can get it on a good sale, kind of get your feet wet, which will then likely get you to buy this one.
True.
This is good stuff.
I might have to pick up the second one. I was kind of like eyeing it up. Like a lot of games came out this holiday, this fall season. Like, I don't know if I have the time to invest in another dungeon crawling RPG, but after hearing you, I might have to just grab it.
Well, I mean, you could also do the Pernell thing, which is, being that it's the Vita or PS4, but in my case, I reviewed it for PS4, but I got it for Vita. Like, I'm going to play it on there, too. But if you're the type that like kind of like to have games on like a stockpile, the Vita is slowly winding down. It could be good to just like, hey, I got a bunch of these games. I'm ready to beat them down when I got the time. Like, they're lined up and ready to go. And being that we kind of had like a weird like dungeon crawler resurgence in the last few years, I don't know how long that's going to last. So I'm content with stockpiling a bunch and just running through them when I have the time.
Nice.
So,
all right. Well, moving on, I'm going to do one quick. Next game to talk about is called We Sing Pop, developed by Wired Productions, published by THQ Nordic. It released October 24th on Xbox One and PS4 for $29.99. Featuring the hottest sounds from the world's biggest artists along with their official HD music videos, We Sing Pop brings the award-winning party experience direct to the comfort of your living room. Sing together or sing off with up to four friends at the same time, or go solo to top the online leaderboards and become the star you were born to be. As you could tell, this is pretty much just straight up karaoke, and it's all centered around pop music. There's 30 songs included in it. It's a mix of like newer artists, like Calvin Harris, Bastille, Avicii, who else is on here? Lord, you know, you kids like that stuff, but then me, the old
Lord's
fogies.
On there?
Yeah, the Lord, Jesus Christ is on there. No, for the fogies like me, there's some good stuff on there, like ABBA, B-52s, George Michael and Wham is on there. Scissor Sisters is on there, which I was excited about. Nah, for both of the audiences, Outkast's Hey Ya is on there, because of course it is. It's overall a pretty solid set list. The problem is, once you get through those 30 songs, that's it. Like, there's no store, there's no DLC. It's 30 songs for $30. I mean, there's a handful of modes in the game. There's, you know, single player. They have, you can either play like with the phrases on screen that shows the pitches that you're supposed to hit, which none of them seem to have any rhyme or reason to them. Like, there were the bars are on the screen showing like, oh, well, these are high notes and then it goes down, but the actual vocals are like the complete opposite. Like the pitch bars in there made no sense to me. I actually did a lot better when I played it on hard mode or expert mode that only had the words at the bottom of the screen.
Weird.
Yeah, I don't understand the rhyme or reason. As you sing, either the bar fills up or you'll see like a green bar above or below it telling you that your pitch is too high or too low. But it just, so many of the songs, the pitch bars that are on the screen, it didn't make sense to me at all. And like, I was doing songs I was familiar with. I wasn't trying to sing like Christine and the Queens Titled. I was singing shit like Love Shack. I know how to sing Love Shack. I've been singing that since Karaoke Revolution way, way back in the day. And I just, like, I did worse in this game than I did on the old school. I don't know if I'm losing my touch with my voice. My silky smooth voice is going away. But
say it so.
It just didn't seem to make sense. Also, go ahead.
I was about to ask, it may be worth like segmenting into this now, because I know you're a huge proponent of the game Rock Band, mm-hmm. which is obviously huge on like karaoke. How would you say the vocal recognition is compared to that game?
I couldn't really tell. I don't sing as much in Rock Band as I used to, but from what I did play, it seemed more accurate in Rock Band than it did with We Sing Pop. again, I can't 100% say which one was better, which one was worse, but a lot of it comes down to the fact that, like, the pitch bars on We Sing just didn't make any kind of sense. Another issue is, like, this, the way that the lyrics were on screen in some of the faster songs, like B.O.B. Airplanes, the words would just go way too fast on the screen. So when sections were being highlighted, you either had to never breathe for some of this stuff or never pause in between words. Like most people, when they sing a song, you'll have stuff like this. But in this game, you just need to have a steady stream of any kind of volume coming out of your mouth so that there were never any pauses and it would always recognize that there was something coming out of your mouth. And it just, nothing ever seemed to feel right with the game. And even with the calibration, you know, it's a fairly easy method of calibration where they just have a little pulsation from a speaker set to music. And you pretty much just move left and right until it lines up. And it, you know, it seemed to be calibrated fine. But even when I was singing, like, the word seemed to show up before I was ready to sing. So when I'm finally saying a word, it's halfway through that bar for the word.
Ugh.
Yeah.
That's not good. It's usually got to give you like a bit of an advance, at least so you can see it coming.
Yeah. And then, you know, my other gripe I mentioned before, the song list is decent and it's only a $30 game, but the lack of any kind of DLC really limits the longevity of the game for sure. You're tired of the 30 songs that are included? Oh well, sing them again. Especially because some of the achievements in the game require you to play the same songs over and over. One of the achievements requires you to play a song 50 times.
Well, I guess they expect this game to be at every party for the next year.
Yeah, which, you know, if they had some kind of DLC or some way to expand the set list in there, I can understand having stuff like that in there and, you know, playing just this game. But when Rock Band 4 is out there and there's literally thousands of songs that you could play in Rock Band 4, like 2400 to be closer to precise, I want to say like 2394, something crazy like that, because I have them all, but it's just
your magnum opus.
$30. I guess it comes down to how much you like the set list in the game, because, you know, I'll say now there's a big chunk of these songs are not in Rock Band. So if you want to play stuff like, no, the Coldplay stuff is in there. Like if you want to play stuff like, what the fuck is Avicii's not in Rock Band. ABBA's not in Rock Band. Lord, the Green Light song isn't. Scissor Sisters, I wish that was in Rock Band. I fucking love that song. You know, there's Wham, George Michael, that stuff isn't in Rock Band. So if these songs appeal to you for $30, it's not a horrible price and it's a decent experience. But compared to what else is out there, it's very hard to give it any kind of a buy it rating. I guess the best I could do is just like a hesitant try it. It comes down to your opinions on the song list, really.
Yeah. And that's the saddest part of all, because what it basically sounds like is that you'd only be buying it specifically for those lost songs, because heaven forbid you do buy it and you're only buying it to listen to the same two songs, and those two songs were out there welcome. You just spent $30 on it where you can get like Rock Band 4 on sale for 20, man, probably. And that comes with more than 30 songs by default.
Yeah.
So that's a rocky place to be.
I mean, if you're a pop fan, again, it's only $30. It does support up to 4 singers at once if you have a big party going on. But again, you need to be a pop fan and you need to be okay with the fact that the 30 songs you get, that's it. If there was a store in there that you could buy more songs, it would be a much easier recommendation. But as it is, it's, you know, there's Rock Band is just better. I hate saying that when I'm reviewing games, that X game is better. But it just offers so much more.
I mean, that's the name of the game when you do reviews, though. You did review it in its own right, but even outside of that, it just, even in its own right, the logic is there's not a lot of content for the price and the intended longevity. So,
yeah. Again, the bright side is it's only a $30 game, so it's not breaking the bank by any means. And in the long run, you're paying a buck a song, which is,
that is true.
Pretty decent. So, anyway, next game is called Fight and Rage, developed and published by Seba Games Dev. It released September 19th on Steam for $19.99. And yes, this is a little bit of an older one than we would normally cover, but Purnell, I know you really, really wanted this game. And Fight and Rage is a brand new, old-school, side-scrolling beat-em-up inspired by the classics from the Golden Age and with an art style that mimics the aesthetic from the 90s arcade gems. This game pays homage to all the classic gameplay features that makes this genre one of the best from its time. Purnell, tell me about Fight and Rage.
Buy this damn game is the best of its current time. That's the review, and I'm sticking to it.
You gotta give me a little bit more. Like, what is the game?
Okay, I'll do my best. So basically, this game and the name is Fight and Rage, which if it's not clear from the name, it is a definite, like, it takes a lot of elements from, say, Streets of Rage and Final Fight. In a good way, though. So the story, I've beat this game like twice, and I'm like still like, story's a weird thing. So the idea is that essentially the world consists of humans and mutants, and mutants are slaughtering and like killing humans. And you are trying to take out the mutant lord or boss in order to save the humans from the douchebag mutants. But one of the party members is also a mutant, which is cool. So that's great. But to the nitty gritty, though, the game involves a lot of kicking ass. And you will be doing so with three different characters. Ricardo, the mutant bullman, who is clearly inspired by Hagar. Gal, female named Gal, whose name I'm positive is parodying Guy from Final Fight. And she's pretty much like a speedy, like, you know, punch brawler who does like a lot of combos. And then there's F. Norris. And I'm pretty sure you know what that's supposed to refer to, which is hilarious in its own right. Who is like sort of like a martial artist type guy who's like dressed in like a sort of like, I want to say like a ninja-esque outfit, but not quite, like a gi, I guess. And, essentially, you are playing through a series of stages with branching pathways, and you have a punch button essentially for like the typical Streets of Rage-esque combos. You have you don't get any unlocked moves, which made me sad, but you almost don't need them because, again, it's meant to emulate games that didn't have unlockable moves. It's meant to emulate games where you come prepared to kick ass. So, like I said, you have your basic combo, you have jump kick, a running attack, you have anti-air attack. You have three super moves per character, more or less, and just a fair number of evasion moves. Like, one thing I did like that I'm not sure how many people remember because of how often this game gets knocked compared to the others, but Streets of Rage 3 had a cool ability where you could double tap up or down, and you would roll between the lanes to kind of quick shift between areas and get out of harm's way. Mm-hmm. This game brought that back, and I've always loved that maneuver. It's so good, nice. But it's useful in this game. So the game is very chaotic. You will likely be dealing with upwards of 20 guys on the screen at once, if not maybe even more. I lost count in certain areas.
Holy shit.
So the name of the game is Crowd Control, and you will be doing that in spades. Like I said, you'll be using every move in your repertoire, in addition to like another move I forgot to mention where you can kind of like bounce off of enemies' heads if you need to with a good parry timing, which also I forgot, the game has freaking parrying too. If you're good at that from like Street Fighter and stuff, you can parry attacks in the game. But it's just, there's so much going on in this thing. So there are upwards to, rough number, like 52 different endings. For example, like 8 per character. Then there are different character combo endings. And then there's an ending tree for if you're playing with all three at once, because this game is 3 players co-op. The music, to put it in perspective, we're recording this episode right now. 2 hours ago, I was doing Rhythm and Pixels talking about this game's OST and telling people on that show to buy this game. That is how much I like this game and its OST, which is all done by one guy. One guy. The developer's name was Sebastian Garcia, and the composer's name is, like, oh my God, like I'm it's amazing how I'm drawing a blank on that right now. Cause I have it on
Gonzalo
paper.
Gonzalo Varela.
Thank you, friend. Yes, Gonzalo Varela. Freaking slick. He has a very eclectic and diverse, you know, array of music from like heart pumping kick ass tunes to salsa rumbas beach music, you know, somber tunes. It's got, it runs the gamut of OST tunes. Enemy variety, very diverse, which leads back into the earlier mentioning of care of dealing with crowd control. So you'll be dealing again like 20 guys at once. And in this crowd of 20, you'll have women with whips who have long reach. You'll have catmen who, when you knock them down, they get up and electrocute. So you don't want to be near them when they get off the ground. Fat pigmen who dash across the screen and slam into you. Giant bison who dash across the screen and punch crowds of people. Doberman who can parry you and then grab you. It's just a crazy array of mutant enemies. They're all inspired by like Streets of Rage and Final Fight enemies, but that's a good thing because, again, this is an homage to classic beat-em-ups. But in the process of being an homage, it somehow became almost better than all of them. And that says a lot. Like, the only gripe I have about this game is that the game can be long, depending on which branching path you end up on. Like, the longest I've been on is about 10 stages. And if you're not continuing, as in you do it clean, it's still going to take you about an hour. So I think if they do like an update, it'd be smarter than to put like a quick save in, like not necessarily to say save your progress and constantly repeat, but at least I'm done for the day, but I want to come back tomorrow and you can just bring it back up and erase it and let you finish the game that you were playing. Something like that would be awesome. And it would definitely help with playthroughs of the game. But it even has, what was that game? You remember Guardian Heroes back in the day? That element that game had where you could buy characters from within the game, like all the enemies and sprites, and you can use them in an arena. This game has that too. Because every time you die, depending on the difficulty, the game will translate your points into currency, which can be used to purchase characters that you fought in the game to be used in an arena. It can use to be bought to purchase new costumes for the characters. You can buy an easy difficulty, a score attack mode, a training mode, a bunch of tips that can help you learn how to play the game better. Oh my God, this game is good. It's just really good.
I wonder if they have any console plans, because this game looks fucking awesome. And I'm sad that it's only on Steam right now.
And sadly, even still, Steam Windows. I don't know a lot of people that don't have Steam on Windows, but I've recommended this game out to a zoo, and I've had at least three people come back and say, crap, it's only on Windows. So, like...
Yeah, I just put that on my wish list.
Yeah, this game needs to come to console. It's a one-guy development team, so I don't know how hard it would be for him to port, but if he can get access to the bees to port, I think this game would make bank on consoles. No doubt about it. None.
Nice.
It's just, I mean, think about it. We had, what was it, The Simpsons, and that period where we had Scott Pilgrim. There was a whole period where Castle Crashers, people want beat-em-ups to come back, and they're still rare. So a game of this caliber would kill on consoles. I have no doubt about that.
Nice.
But as a Steam product, I guess you got to do the lead in. I want to cut you off on that.
As a Steam product for $19.99 US dollars, what is your verdict on this one, Purnell?
If you are the type who talks and gushes about how much they love classic beat-em-ups in this era, and you have the means to buy and play this game, and you don't, I'm almost inclined to prepare to call you a hypocrite, because this game deserves your money and your time. If you are not too fluent in classic beat-em-ups, and you're wondering what the hell is all the fuss about, but you don't quite want to go back and play Streets of Rage 2, which you should do that, you should buy this game and play it and see what the fuss is about and see why a guy in, like, I think it's like Uruguay would sit down and create this game of his own time to pay homage to those games. And again, in my personal opinion, it's kind of surpassed them. It's worth damn money and you will love it.
That's the first time I've ever heard it pronounced Uruguay.
Well, is it pronounced Uruguay?
Uruguay.
Way. I always pronounce it Uruguay. I just say it.
I've never heard it that way before.
Well, trust me, I've heard it both ways. I had to do it. But no, honestly, I think it's one of those cases where it's like, if you've never heard it pronounced any other way and you just start saying it in a way, it just kind of sticks with you. Kind of like how the whole tomato-tomato thing happened. They heard that one person say tomato. They're like, oh, I guess that's how it's said because no one's corrected me yet. So just ride the wave and then you're 90 years old and your deathbed. What would you like as your last meal? One tomato, please. What the hell are you talking about? It's tomato. Oh, God, I'm going to die of embarrassment. And then ding dong, is it? Mm-hmm. But that was morbid, but fun. But yeah, this game is freaking grand. I think it's worth the money and the time, and everyone should play it as long as they have some inkling of wanting it. Even the art style is good. Like, the art is so colorful and active. It's, Jesus, man, this is good. Good. I can't stop gushing about this game.
Sounds good. Well, Purnell, thanks as always for coming on and chatting about games. I know you'll be back on again soon. Do you have any final thoughts to sum it all up?
Rage and fight. Fight and rage. Get your fist up. It's time to go. Party time. Punch a bear. It's fun, but...
All right, next up is the game Nimbatus, the space drone constructor developed and published by Stray Fawn Studio. It will be releasing Q1 2018 on Steam Early Access, and this is a preview from a pre-alpha version of the game. And our good friend Tom Miller's covering this one. Tom, how's it feel to play a pre-alpha for the show?
Well, I feel like one of the privileged few here. Nimbatus, you told me about it, and I saw that it was from Stray Fawn Studio, which is the same developer who made Niche, which came out earlier this year. And I was a big fan of that game, so I was really excited to see what new stuff they were coming out with.
Nice. Anyway, Nimbatus is a procedurally generated action sim. Craft freely customizable drones and explore an endless universe. Drones interact with the destructible environment in a physically correct manner, which I find interesting to put in the description. On your way, you will find hundreds of different drone components and research groundbreaking new technology. This sounds pretty interesting. And again, pre-alpha, like super early look on this.
So, yeah.
Tom, how was it?
So this is a pre-alpha, and they kind of just have like a skeleton of what the game is probably going to eventually be. But in the time that I spent playing it, I think it's a really cool idea. So you get the ability to build your own spacecraft, pretty much, and you can build it any way you want to. Of course, if you build it in some ways, you're not going to be able to fly, and you're just going to crash into the planet immediately and die. But when you do build it correctly. Or it's just one of those like sandbox, like Lego type games where you can do so much with it. I was just actually looking around on the Discord earlier, and I was able to get like the missions done with the ships that I was building. But then I looked at what other people were doing, and just like even in the early stage, people are just doing crazy things with this engine. So I feel like for people who are interested in that kind of a construction thing, this game is going to have a ton to offer. Like, even in its sort of skeletal stage that it's in now, it's a lot of fun to play around with.
So how much is there at this stage in the game?
So right now, you have the galactic, like, sort of the main map that you can go on. You can warp around to different planets, and there are shops and everything. You have a few different types of missions that you can do that usually involve destroying an enemy hive or transmitters. And most of the missions right now are pretty basic, and that is something that I do hope kind of gets fleshed out. But you do have a good opportunity to fly around and get a feel for how the game, it's more of like a proof of concept right now. And then there are also some other things, like there is a sumo, I don't remember, it's like sumo training ground is what they called it, but and it involves, like, there are parts of this game that are like, I'm not smart enough probably to play it. It's how it feels. Because you can automate your drones as well. So you can, like, install parts that give them different AI functions and make it so that they can, like, mine planets and attack enemies on their own. And so, like, it brings in this whole, like, electronic circuitry or, like, a programming element into it. So, like, I pretty much just fly around and shoot stuff, but, like, if you were to get into the actual, like, you know, the real, you know, meat of the game, you could potentially do just ridiculous things. And I'm just, like, just even looking at the Steam page, I'm looking at, there's, like, this squid-like thing that shoots out about 1,000 lasers at once, and, like, I want to at least be able to do stuff like that, I guess, but... But anyway, this is a really good start to a game. And considering that this is a pre-alpha, I can't wait to see where it goes, honestly.
And if other people are not only interested in checking this out, but helping with the development of it, it's actually on Kickstarter right now. As of the Monday that we're recording this, there are 21 days left, so it goes until December 5th here. They've already met their goal, so the game is backed. It is happening. And now they're just looking for stretch goals. They recently just hit the stretch goal for drone races, and they're only a couple grand away from drone versus drone combat.
Yeah, there's, I mean, there is probably going to be so much more added to this, and it's definitely one that I'm going to be keeping an eye on as time goes by. I might even back this myself.
There you go, man. The link to the Kickstarter we will have in the description, so feel free to browse on down to the show notes, click on there, and throw a couple of bucks their way. Their estimated delivery, I'm guessing, for the full game and everything else is looking to be March 2019, but again, it will be hitting Steam Early Access Q1 2018. I'm guessing, based on your raving of it so far, this is definitely something to keep an eye on.
Oh, yeah, I think so. I think it'll be, I can't wait to see where it goes.
Sounds good. I am eager to see more about this game as well, because it looks batshit crazy in the best way possible.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, well, Tom, thank you as always for coming on and chatting about this game. I'll have to get some updates from you as development progresses with this one. And any final words to sum everything up?
Damn it, I told you I was going to come up with something.
And you didn't?
No.
Next game to talk about is called Numantia, developed and published by Rico Technology. It released October 25th on PS4 and Steam, November 2nd on the Xbox One, $19.99 on Steam, $29.99 on consoles. The choice is yours. Play as a Numantian warrior against the Roman legions, or expand the power of Rome throughout the Iberian Peninsula. Relive history fighting in epic battles alongside real historical figures commemorating the 2150th anniversary of the Siege of Numantia. Royal Sefton's covering this one. Royal, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay, except, you know, I forgot to put out my decorations for that 2150th anniversary. I'm a little bummed.
How can you forget?
I got busy, and then there was a thing, and yeah. So here we are.
What's the present for the 2150th anniversary?
Cavalry elephants.
Oh, man. So tell me about Numantia.
All right. So Numantia is a historical turn-based strategy game. As you described, you can play as a Numantian army, or you can play as the Roman Empire, and each one has some tactical differences, of course, including who won in the course of history. And you pick a campaign going with one team or the other, and then you play across a hex battlefield, hex shapes, and position your different units. They could be units with slings, units with javelins, units with shorts, with swords and shields, or even sometimes a hero unit, a single unit standing alone, some important character vital to the Celtiberian history, for example. And how you position your units, whether you're with the Romans or with the Numantians, determines their morale. And their morale is supposed to determine, how effective they are in combat. So that's kind of the bird's eye view of the strategy piece of the game. Between campaigns, there's also settlements that you get to review, certain events that could lead to new battles or the acquisition of resources, and then you go to the market to outfit your troops, you recruit new troops in the Hall of Heroes, all that stuff. So it's divided between these battles, as well as different historical events that you can choose to go one way or the other with, which determines what kind of battle might happen next, or what resources are at your disposal.
Interesting.
So, but of course, the bread and butter is the actual fighting. That's where most of the game takes place, and where you're going to spend most of your time, and also where you're going to most likely come to the same conclusion I did about Numantia.
And what is that?
You know, sir, I don't like it. and you know, it pains me to say that. I never like to give a negative review, but it really feels like it needed more time in the oven. I don't think the game is as feature complete as it should have been. Or maybe it just didn't quite live up to the ambitions that they had in mind for the game.
Do you think it's something where maybe like they were shooting a bit higher than they should have?
Maybe, yeah. Yeah, maybe so. Because, you know, you have these battles that are supposed to be fairly large scale, but they're really not. I mean, you might have a total of 50 or 100 units all spread across, I don't know, what, 10 hexes or so. These little skirmishes that are supposed to be, like, you know, big battles. And strategically, the game has... It doesn't have quite the depth I was hoping for. There's no elevation changes, you know, high ground or low ground advantage or disadvantage. And it started to feel pretty quickly after the tutorial like just this war of attrition where I continue to throw units at each other. And ultimately, what's left standing is probably just one of my hero units that can't be killed. Or maybe they can be killed. And of course, I'd lose, but they're just so tough that they... just mow through, you know, the Roman infantry. So, kind of disappointing that way. You know, there's a lot of talk in the tutorial about the importance of morale, and where you position your troops is vital to morale. If you walk them out too far, there's this last rim on the movement grid. The hexes are colored yellow when you go to move them. And if you move them into those squares, their morale is negatively affected. Like they feel too separate from the rest of the squad or the
unit.
That's
actually kind of interesting.
It's a good strategic element. And I thought, okay, well, I see. So obviously, if you stretch yourself out too thin, you know, they'll become discouraged. I get that. Unfortunately, in practice, it didn't really feel like it made a difference. You know, you could have your hero unit sitting out there alone with virtually no morale, and he's still whooping butt. So, you know, it didn't really play out the way I anticipated. And after the tutorial, it felt like, oh, you know, it's kind of a roll of the dice. You know, try to flank your enemies, and flanking is supposed to enhance your morale and decrease theirs, but I didn't really notice, a big benefit to it, except I'd get a 2-on-1 effect sometimes and just completely slaughter a unit if I approached them from that angle. Or they'd get me in turn. Plus, if you play as the Romans, keeping your units tightly together is supposed to enhance their morale, whereas if you play as the Numantians, leaving a little space between them is supposed to be better for their morale.
They need their personal bubble.
Yes, they need their private space. But you could see what they were going for there, you know, that there's some sort of tactical depth, but in practice I just found it wasn't as deep as it wanted to be. So if they had taken more time to really flesh out some of those combat mechanics, or to really ensure that the morale play tested out as having a significant impact to the gameplay, I can see where that would have been a deeper, better game. Unfortunately, it just doesn't have that.
Now, do you think this is something that some updates or patches could help? Because I know Ricoh Technology, some of their earlier games like Yasai Ninja, they released to fairly negative reviews, but they didn't give up on it. They issued some patches and some updates and made it an overall better experience. Do you think this game still has the potential to be something better if they kept working on it?
I think that's absolutely the case. Like I said, it needs a little more time to bake. I think if there was more time and effort put into it, it could be a more complete and better game. And what's nice about console and Steam releases in this day and age, you know, versus buying like a cartridge or a CD, you know, with older consoles not being internet connected, you know, you can release a game and actually put it into circulation, and if there is room for correction, you know, you have that opportunity.
Yeah.
And this would be one of those things that I think would really benefit Numantia in particular. Not that I want them to necessarily look at the customers as kind of the QA department and say, okay, so thanks for trying our beta. But this, you know, this could be a better game with a little bit of effort, a little bit of polish, and that would be to their benefit because it's an interesting genre. It's an interesting idea. You know, historically inspired turn-based strategy is not something you see a whole lot of. And I think that, you know, I was interested and a little let down, a little disappointed by the game overall. So, you know, if they take that feedback and they really help shape it and work it in, it could be a much better game.
Well, I'm looking forward to hopefully seeing some updates to it. I'm kind of worried to ask, but $20 on Steam, $30 on console. What is your official verdict?
Yeah, it's a deny it for me, especially having reviewed the Xbox version. If I paid $30 for it, I would want my money back. It's really not that caliber of game, not yet. You know, there's a good amount of detail put into the storyline and, you can tell that there's the labor of love. There's a lot of, historical detail to it, but the gameplay is just, it's too shallow and it's too poor right now. With a little polish, it could come to that value, but it's just not there yet.
Hopefully they keep working on it. Like I said, I know with Isai Ninja, they didn't give up on the game. Hopefully they don't give up on this one either, because it looks pretty interesting, and, you know, it's always a bummer when a game just doesn't click for us.
Right. I hear you. This is just one of those cases, unfortunately, but, you know, I wish them luck, and I really hope that if they come back and, you know, release a second version or an update, I'd be happy to give it another go.
Sounds good. Well, Royal, thanks as always for coming on and chatting about the game. Any final thoughts to sum it all up?
Sticks and stones may break my bones, but javelins take down elephants.
All right, and finally tonight, our good friend Chris Taylor's joining to close out the show. Chris, how are you doing?
Doing great. I just got a new chair.
Ooh.
Yeah, I've been using a folding chair, like, forever, and it was literally injuring me. So now I have, like, an actual nice office chair. I'm so happy.
How is a folding chair injuring you?
It's a folding chair. You can't just sit on those for, like, 4 hours, you know?
True. Oh, man. Well, you ready to talk about games?
Yeah, sure. Let's talk about them.
Cool. First game you're here to talk about is called It'll Do 2 Plus, developed by Ludosity, published by Nicholas, released November 14th on the Switch for $29.99. A physical launch edition. It includes a water-resistant island map and a full-color instruction booklet. That's cool. I like that they've been doing that with their physical releases. Sassy nice. Adventure It'll and her reluctant flying fox friend Tipsy are back for their greatest adventure ever. Stranded on yet another island and armed with a magical map, our heroes explore the three-dimensional landscape in search of valuable loot. Can they find the 8 scattered pieces of the raft that could be their ticket home? Chris, tell me about it.
Okay, so It'll Do. Well, for one, I like that there's a physical version coming out and it's going to have cool stuff with it. So that's always a thing I like to see in this increasingly digital world. But, yeah, so It'll Do. So it is a kind of an adventure. It's an over the top isometric, action adventure game. Very much, you know, I have to say it right off the bat. It's very much in the style of the original Legend of Zelda. So you wander around this somewhat open world. Like, you can definitely visit a lot of the dungeons before you can really do much in them. So, and it's just lots and lots of space, like, to explore and, like, see all these kind of cool things. The beginning landscapes that I saw, like, one was just, like, you know, a typical sort of grassy, fieldy type place with pillows all over the place for a reason I'll get to in a minute. And, like, then there's a beach where there's, like, giant candies, some of which are sentient and are hostile. And then sometimes it's just, like, candy canes. But what I love about this game is that, like, there's humor and, like, interesting just interesting things, like, all throughout the game. So, for instance, you go down to this beach and there are giant candy canes sticking out of the ground because this is supposed to be, like, a sort of tropical dessert paradise sort of thing. But the candy canes are all, like, partially melted, and there's, like, seaweed and, like, starfish stuck to them and stuff. Like, it's not at all edible. It's just some irresponsible person put candy all over the beach. And then, like, one of them jumps out, and it's a snake, and it attacks you, and, you know, etc. And then there's, like, a legitimately gorgeous scene that I ran into in the early part of the game. That's like this sort of starshine sort of area.
And oh, that forest area.
Yeah, it looks really cool. Like it reminded me a lot of like a Paper Mario or like something that Nintendo would put into a game to make you go ooh and ah, which you know they're very good at. So that's like the level we're talking about with this game. The graphics are like this really clean, really crisp and colorful looking sort of cell shading, done in a slightly squiggle art style. So it does look like you're playing through like a really intricate like children's book or something like that. I really like that. But in the meat of the gameplay, it actually like the fact that you're just a little girl with a stick in a box, I suppose, that looks like it just has wings strapped to him. Who, by the way, only really serves to give you hints. Like, there's just all kinds of care, like, put stuffed into, like, every inch of this game. Like, this is a really, really well-put-together game. The first dungeon, like, kind of introduces the mechanics of it, and they even, like, break the fourth wall a little bit, and they're like, this looks like a tutorial dungeon. And it's the safety fort. Like, when you go in, there's, like, bubble wrap and pillows and safety cones and all this stuff everywhere so that you can, like, wander around without ever getting hurt. And, like, that's just kind of making fun of the whole tutorial dungeon type thing. So I really, really quite enjoyed that. And then the castle, like, the dungeon in the Candy Beach is literally called, like, a sand castle. And, yeah, just so much personality. I really, really, like, every little bit of this game, there's like something to look at or talk or like interact with, or there's enemies and they're actually pretty legit. Like, you know, they actually do provide a consistent challenge. Only, you know, like I said, you're a girl and you hit them with a stick and then like confetti flies out of them. Or maybe they'll like explode into bones like in a Secret of Mana game, except that instead of like an actual skeleton, it's just all femurs. Like, it just looks like old, like, chicken bones.
Yeah.
And, like, cartoony things like that. But, like, there's a depth to this game that I really, really appreciate, so.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it when I played it on Xbox One, so I'm excited to see it hitting the Switch as well.
Yeah, it definitely has the makings of a great portable game, so I'm really glad that it's on Switch. But it also looks great on the big screen, so, as I'm sure you could attest.
Mm-hmm.
Cool.
So overall, $30. What is your verdict on this one? And of course, it is a little bit more expensive on the Switch because they're doing a physical release and there's just that physical Switch tax that happens.
Yeah.
But at least they're making up for it with that full color booklet and a water resistant map.
Yeah, I was going to say, at $30, my philosophy in gaming and like digital stuff, like if there is a physical version and it's a $30 game, go for the physical version every time. But if you are so inclined to play a marvelous like throwback Zelda for half the price of a Zelda game, just starring, you know, a different person and also with a lot more quirk, this is a worthwhile purchase. I mean, it has the makings of a $30 game. There's nothing that feels cheap about this whole experience. So I say go for it.
Sounds good. And then one final game to talk about tonight is called Chess Ultra, developed and published by Ripstone Games. This one released November 2nd on the Switch for $12.49, available on pretty much every other platform already. Introducing the most breathtaking chess game ever made, featuring stunning visuals, seamless online multiplayer, and Grandmaster-approved AI, whether you're a beginner or a veteran, Chess Ultra has something to offer players of all ages and ability. Chris, what'd you think of Chess Ultra?
Well, the last time I was really involved in a chess video game, it was on this DOS game that came on a floppy disk that literally, like, it would show you the board, and then it would show you the pieces, and each piece was a square, and, like, a pawn would just be a black square with a P on it, and then, like, a knight would be a black square with a K on it. And then you sat there and, like, tried to play chess by actually entering the coordinates and such. So, it's nice to see that it has progressed in the last 30 years to Chess Ultra, which, man, they really, really, I think that if anybody ever earned the title of Ultra, it would be this game in regards to chess, because there is so much. I didn't even find reading material on how much stuff there is in this game. I just like looked through all the stuff and I was like, holy crap. And then of course on the menu, there's this other thing that says, it just says Chess Ultra. And when you click on it, I guess it's for in-game purchases that aren't available yet. So it looks like there's going to be even more.
Oh yeah. They release, some different cosmetic like chess sets and boards and locations, stuff like that.
Oh man. The chess pieces look really wonderful in this game. Like the whole thing is just done in this really nice high def way. The music is this classy, like classical, like, you know, hoity-toity music that you, you know, slowly sip brandy to or something like that.
Hoity-toity.
Yeah.
That's something I haven't heard in a while.
Well, it applies to this game. Whenever you start like any games, you know, you can basically, you know, you play against a computer and you choose like your location, which it's all of these like different rich people studies, I guess. Or I don't know, maybe there's a cathedral in there or something. It's really, they're very good looking, locations that will make you feel very high class. And, then the pieces, you can go like with standard pieces, wood pieces, chips that just have the little designs on them, which kind of reminds me of my old DOS game. And a thing called Fire and Brimstone, which is a little kind of nuts. It's just like these intricate marble things that, man, I don't even know.
I mean, what They're else are you going to play on when you're, you know, playing chess against Satan in hell?
Exactly. Yeah, it's kind of got that sort of playing chess at the gates of Mordor. Then, of course, yeah, you can do the online tournament, which I didn't dare do because I'm not that good at chess. And then you can do the challenges where you can fail any one of like about a dozen like actual chess games from history. Like famous chess games are recreated in this gosh darn game. And it's like you can play any of them and like instantly lose and stuff. It's great. you can play challenges like, yeah, you know, mate in a certain amount of moves, like. And then there's, of course, like a tutorial and all this other stuff. Like, this game will kind of show you how to get good at chess if you're not good at chess. And it must have worked on me because I actually did win a game of this chess. I was so, nice.
So
yeah.
Proud of you.
I know. It's almost like I'm one of my friends when he was 12 and used to beat me all the time.
See, now your next step is to go check out Ripstone when they're on Twitch streaming. Because they will routinely stream Chess Ultra on Twitch, which has Twitch integration in some of the versions where the chat can play along. And you know how you said that you would give coordinates in your older games?
Uh-huh.
That's how people could play on Twitch.
Nice.
I'm not sure if the Twitch integration is in the Switch version or not, though.
I mean, how many other games can you actually play with the developers in a predictable, like, way, you know?
And usually win, because they're not the greatest at the game. They made it,
well,
but God, you know, bless their hearts. Holly, Michelle, I love you, but you're not the greatest at chess.
Dang.
And they
called out.
They know. They know. They laugh about it. They've been on the show laughing about it.
Well, maybe they should drink some more brandy.
In a snifter. With the hoity-toity music.
Yes, with the hoity-toity music. It has to be hoity, it has to be toity.
It can't just be hoity.
No. That's racist.
Yeah, fuck that.
I mean, even if they aren't the best at playing chess, this is by far the most impressive version of chess I have seen since Chessmaster 3000 on the Super Nintendo. So,
so glad you have all those other chess games over the years to compare it to.
But, I have three, but
not
yeah.
bad. But 12:49 on the Switch. What is your verdict?
Look, okay, so I know not everyone picks up a Switch. Like I'm always hearing people like, I don't know if I want to get a Switch yet because they just don't have that killer app. And it's like, yeah, so you know, it's not exactly a selling point on the Switch to be like featuring Breath of the Wild, Super Mario Odyssey, and chess. Wait for it. Ultra. So it's not, you know, a system seller, but gosh, if you want to play chess on a Switch, especially since you got two controllers and a little portable screen here, you know, this is a two-player experience.
Ooh, does it have touchscreen control?
It has touchscreen menus. Let me look right quick and see if it has touchscreen control. I actually got it right here in front of me.
That's pretty damn cool if you could just, like, pick up the pieces on the touchscreen.
It's loading my game. Yeah, it totally does.
That's awesome! Oh my god.
Yeah, you just touch the screen, touch where you want it to go, and it will go there.
Oh fuck, I'm double dipping now. That sold me. Legitimately, that legitimately sold me to double dip on the game. Is that there's touchscreen controls.
You're going to be chess ultra-ultraing, my friend.
Ultra HD remix or something.
Yes. The final challengers.
Indeed. Well, Chris, thank you so much for joining and talking about these two games. Everybody else, stick around. We're going to take a quick little break, and I will be back with Josh Barron, Ian Martin, and Masha Lapierre of The Travelers to chat about their new album and all the other fun stuff that they're working on. Chris, any final words to end this?
Chess, ultra, 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 ultra. That's what we need to go for next. Four ultras. HD remix.
Plus alpha.
And Knuckles.
Welcome back, everyone. Thanks for hanging around. Got a fantastic lineup of guests joining me right now. First up, third appearance on the show, Josh Barron. Welcome back. How are you doing?
Oh, pretty good. Yourself?
You know, one of those days.
I know.
This isn't about me. This is about you and your cohorts.
Okay. Yes.
Who did you bring along with you?
I brought Ian Martin. Hi. and I brought Masha Lapierre. Both of them are my equals.
Equals? Wow. Look at you sharing the spotlight.
I know. I like to do that.
So, Ian and Masha, welcome to the show. How are you two doing?
I'm doing great. Thanks.
Yeah, me too.
Fantastic. Ian, this is your second time on the show, so welcome back. Are you Thank in you. A restaurant this time?
I am not. I'm actually in front of my computer. This is one of my recording mics, so hopefully I sound a little better than my phone, or I'm going to feel silly having purchased this thing, right?
So no wine tasting today.
No wine tasting today. No Calistoga. although I guess it was almost a year ago, right? Maybe 10 months or so.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, somewhere around there. I don't remember. I barely remember last week. So asking anything more than a month ago is just, that's not happening. Every time I have guests coming back on the show, I have to look up my own episodes to remember when it was and what they were here for. Because I honestly forgot this was Josh's third time. I thought it was his second. That's how good I am at my job. But Masha, this is your first time on the show. Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
Thank you. I'm good. I'm doing really well, actually.
I want to appreciate the fact that your Skype icon is of a cat, so I'm not the only one with a cat icon anymore.
Yay, no. Yeah, no, that cat I actually saw last week, so I was doing cat yoga at, like, a cat sanctuary, and it was super cute.
Nice. Do you know the cat's name?
Bellatrix.
Nice.
Yeah.
Adorable kitty. So anyway, you three are here to talk about the recent album from the Travelers, of which you were all members of, called Ode to the Lovers. Came out, how long ago did it come out? A couple of weeks?
Yeah, I think it's been like two.
Yeah.
So tell me about the album. What are you here to talk about? Tell me about it. Let's do this.
Do either of you want to?
Do it live.
I'm always usually the spotlight, so I don't know.
Yeah, start it off. Do it.
Okay. Well, basically, we wanted to do something a little more focused and consistent in style. The first album was kind of like a sampler or wine tasting in Ian's we wanted to do something more focused, so we thought, let's do something about love, because there's a lot of songs out there about love. It's almost inevitable that musicians cover that in some form. So we wanted to take like love themes and maybe even stuff that might not have been a love theme and create new lyrics for those. And so we just kind of wanted to take memorable pieces, and we even have a couple of obscure selections too. I've never seen anybody arrange Dew Prism or Threads of Fate, depending on where you're from. But Fabian did a really wonderful job with that. So, we decided to bring some newcomers in the group and give them a chance to, contribute. And, we just kind of cycle in people, but I mean, consistently, you know, Masha, Ian, and myself are usually arranging at least once on every album.
So what roles did you each play in this album?
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. We were all arrangers, and we also we all collaborated on basically making sure that, you know, people were on time with deadlines and kind of creating the overall concept for the album, and that sort of stuff. And then afterwards, making sure that, you know, after everything was recorded, making sure that it all got mastered properly, and also making sure that artwork was coordinated and that, you know, it was released and that all of the, you know, the spelling's correct. And, you know, what do we want the liner notes to say? What do we want? You know, are all the credits correct? Is everyone, you know, is everyone getting the credit that they deserve? You know, so it's, I mean, it is fun. It's a lot of like the quote unquote fun stuff, because you get the experience of arranging tracks and hearing other musicians make this music come to life. But then it's also a lot of sort of the bureaucratic stuff, you know, is everyone's email address correct? You know, where are all the files located? You know, can we organize all of this stuff? You know, is the art, like, well, how do we want the art to look? You know, how are we, you know, what format is it in? You know, this time we kind of experimented with something new, in that we had a music video come out before the album was released. And that's something that we hadn't really done before. So we took Josh's arrangement of Song of Time, and we talked to both Joe and Trey and had them send us videos, edited it together, and threw it on YouTube as kind of like a teaser for the album. So that was something we hadn't done before. And I think in general, we've been trying lately to do more music videos. So we're going to probably do a couple more music videos from Ode to the Lovers. And then from there.
You should just do a music video for every song on it, like Weird Al did with his one album.
Oh yeah.
That would be super fun.
Oh, wow.
You want to compare yourself in life to Weird Al.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I hope we can become that prolific someday.
You just need more accordion on your albums, and that'll do it.
I think we kind of are right now. Well, we do like two albums a year, and I don't know how many EPs we, you know.
Yeah.
This actual album started off as an EP, and then we ended up getting so many people wanting to contribute, and are like, why not make a full album out of it?
Yeah.
So.
And oh, sorry.
Go ahead. No, go ahead. You're the important people here. You guys talk.
Oh. Well, you know, with a lot of people contributing really quality arrangements, you want to give everyone a forum in which to participate in the arranging. So, you know, it's really nice that people are willing to contribute in that sense. And if it goes from an EP to an album, that's totally fine, because it means that a lot of people are putting in the time and effort to really make it something nice, you know, something big.
You mentioned a lot of people contributing. I'm looking at the Bandcamp page that has all the different performers on there. And I did notice someone did play the accordion on this album. So you are that much closer to Weird Al.
Yeah.
We're trying.
So Kenny playing the accordion on Troy and Beauty was our first foray into having an accordion on a recording. So I'd like to, you know, at least in my own arrangements, bring that back, you know.
Oh, it's coming back. I'm definitely using it. But it was my first time arranging French. So I never did French music prior to that. It's kind of a rearrangement, sort of, because I didn't quite get access to an accordion before, so I really wanted to make it way different and add an accordion and then viola, and then I got a vocalist who speaks French way better than I do to do the lyrics. Plus, I don't do lyrics, so I did it once for quite. Yeah, I know. And Julie did a really amazing job. She wrote the lyrics and sang the piece.
I got to record her in person, and that was so fun.
Yeah, she's like the real deal. She's really classy and brings a nice texture to that song. So, I could talk all night about how great our team is and how how fortunate I am to work with every single person on the team, and we all have put in the time we still have. I feel like we're still running full force, even though we released something, because there's a lot of things planned for next year. but you know, we're trying really hard to keep up with the demand, and I really didn't anticipate. I mean, I kind of knew that since we're doing something different that nobody else is really doing, it was kind of a gamble, because people may be like, folk music, you know, but but I thought, you know, if we did like some folk and then maybe did some, I kind of inject some contemporary things into it, to where it's more acoustic. And it's a nice blend, I think, of past and current, to keep people interested. When you look at Mitsuda's albums, like Xenogears and Chrono Trigger, Chrono Cross, anything he does as far as arrangement, people just love. So I figured if we could bring that, more of that, people would really latch onto it. So, yeah. And I think we've done a good job consistently every album of increasing our fan base, and it's actually skyrocketed a lot more with this one, because, you know, we have Masha did Kingdom Hearts, and Ian and Masha also did Undertale, and we also got a Zelda track, which, you know, I did, and then plenty of Final Fantasy. So, I mean, we tried to hit the very popular things this time around instead of like a lot of obscurities, which we did with the first album. So
I also want to say, compared to the first album, I could pronounce a lot more of the tracks on this one, which I'm happy about. I could go down the list and be like, I can say Seal of the Wind, and then I'll look at the first album and I'll be like, Sephiel, Chiangal. Like,
I'm surprised you remember those. Honestly,
it's like we're speaking Dothraki, isn't it?
When are you going to do a song in Dothraki?
I don't know. I think we should do a mashup between Game of Thrones and World of Warcraft. Just have two characters, an orc and a Dothraki.
Oh God,
talking. You know,
could be a duet. You know,
Orc Rocky.
Oh God, yeah. Rocky. Another idea, since I'm just going to keep going back to this, you could get Kenny involved and do a polka medley of a bunch of different games.
Oh yeah, we can.
Hey,
that would be fun. Yeah.
Two hours of Tetris.
Oh, that's... God, yes.
Oh, I just performed Tetris this weekend. It actually was pretty good.
Oh, nice.
What is the longest Tetris performance you've ever known?
Oh, I don't know.
Well, Masha, how long was yours?
I think ours was actually 6 minutes, but it was like variations on a theme.
Because okay. I think the longest one I know of was performed by the 1UPs. They performed the Tetris theme at my wedding during the dance with the bride, how you have to, you know, pay the dollar, dance with the bride, and then get your cake. They played it the entire time.
Wow.
So it was about 15, 20 minutes of Tetris theme, and it just kept getting faster and faster and faster as the dance went on. So that was fun.
Dang, I really wish I could get them to play my wedding.
Well, hit them up and ask them.
Yeah, there we go.
Can't hurt. That's what I did.
It's been actually a long time since I've actually talked to Mustin. I think since Xenogears Light, actually, and that was back in, oh, heck, I don't know.
Million years
too
ago.
Long ago.
Yeah.
2003.
65 million BC, right?
Yeah, yeah. That was when I originally worked with that team and stuff, and I was just doing piano arrangements. I never done anything else, so humble beginnings.
You were on Xenogears Light?
Yeah. Yeah, I was the third track. Very first piano solo piece on the album.
Hot damn, you are on here.
Were you in high school then, or?
Yeah, I was, wow. I think I was, well, I don't even remember when that album came out. If it was 2003, I would have been a sophomore at that time in high school.
Oh, wow.
So yeah, quite a long time ago for me.
Yeah.
Man, I forgot how much Christian Picot did on this album.
Yeah, he did like everything. Now he works for Ubisoft. Isn't that crazy?
I thought he left Ubisoft, actually.
Oh, I'm not sure.
I think he mentioned a few months ago that he left.
Oh, man. I wish I could say that. I left Ubisoft. Clearly something is better.
Maybe just got bored with it. You never know.
Yeah, contracts end.
They're too French.
Yeah. Too French.
Speaking of French, you said that on Ode to the Lovers, it was the first time you did a French arrangement. The big thing with the Travelers is covering all these different European styles. What other new styles did you guys tackle with this album?
Well, one of the things that actually Fabian did was a Filipino Rondalia arrangement, the Dew Prism or Threads of Fate one. He plays a bunch of the different instruments associated with that tradition. And so that was really something we hadn't explored before. And it was nice because it's not European, you know?
Masha, you also did something gypsy,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, flamenco. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Bulleria is simple and clean, so that was fun, because I don't think we've done flamenco yet.
No, mm-hmm. No. Yeah.
Yeah, so that was cool.
We were all trying to do something like that we haven't done for an album before, so a lot of new. So I think we did a really good job. I like the simple and clean arrangement, actually. I like it more than the original. So. Oh, no.
Well, but yeah, that was a tough one, because it's like such a popular song, you know, so I wanted to do something different, because I was scared to I didn't want to ruin it, you know, because it's so important.
Oh, it came out fantastically.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed that one. I know when the album first came out, I played a handful of the songs on our episode that week. Simple and Clean was one of them, along with Home from Undertale, the Final Fantasy VI track. I can't recall the name of it. And then Suteki Dane, is that how it's said?
From yeah. Suteki Dane. Yeah.
Yay.
I think all of us actually were in that as a voice.
Yeah. Oh yeah, the pub patrons. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I did like I think 8 different takes, and eventually when I got to like take 6, 7, and 8, I was starting to sound like a drunk dwarf. I was like, you know, or something like that. But I actually got glasses and clinked them together. I wish Jordan would have put that in there, because I was like, we should just make it sound like we're clinking glasses, you know, mugs and tankards.
Now, did you really get drunk for that, or were you faking it?
No, I wasn't. I was just trying to fake it. But
man, you were not method.
Years of D&D dungeon mastering couldn't have prepared me for that.
D&D, before we went live, you had a very special achievement that you accomplished in D&D. Would you like to share it with the world now?
I became Batman. No, I'm kidding. I didn't become Batman, but I'm running a character. This is, I don't usually do player characters, because I'm more of a DM, but my buddy's running this thing, and I'm actually a vengeful paladin. So I have like this thing where I don't take prisoners, and the wicked always die or get persecuted or something like that. I even have this ability called Searing Smite, where I use like the righteous fire to burn my enemies. So I was even allowed to create my own band of knights, which are all dragonborn, and we all have like either brass or red or copper scales, and we all like use our breath weapons to kill undead and all this stuff. And but I also do this thing where I have my signet ring, and I kind of pull a Batman there, and from Batman versus Superman, if you've seen it. And I use my magic to make my ring hot, and then I brand my enemies.
Oh my God.
And and it's a spell, so if they change their life, that scar will go away. It'll heal. But if they don't, and they still commit crimes, that scar will get nastier and nastier and nastier.
Your Batman's kind of a dick.
Yeah, I am.
You should play the D&D system I've been using. Like, it's really dark like that, because it's kind of like really? A Game of Thrones thing. Yeah, it's called Blood and Bone. You should totally check it out.
Oh, yeah, I'll definitely.
Yeah.
We're actually going to be doing, because when I come back from my trip, we're running mine. I'm running the Tomb of Annihilation module for D&D. So it was written by the guy who created Adventure Time.
Yeah.
So yeah, he did like a lot of puzzles and dungeons and stuff, and it's in a jungle. So and there's like dinosaur racing and all this other stuff. It's kind of cool.
A tavern CD. Remember what was it? The Ballad of Drizzt or something?
Yeah. We should do that.
Yeah, live from some tavern. Yeah.
Yeah, if it's Elf Song Tavern from Baldur's Gate.
Yeah.
If you've ever played the PlayStation 2 game, Dark Alliance.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Still I love those games. I think I played those on GameCube, actually. One or two of them, I think.
Oh, yeah. That was when you could like play four players and just like kill everything. You're a murder hobo in that game.
Man, I loved those games. Just those top down action RPG hack and slasher. I love those games.
And actually, we got to do a track for Obsidian Entertainment for their Pillars of Eternity.
Yeah.
We Masha got us that actually. Got us in contact with the composer of the game and he's the lead audio director of Obsidian right now. So.
Yep.
Yeah, and then Ian gave it a really, you don't want to try to pronounce that title.
Oh, yeah, Aran Arsa.
Yeah, I just pulled that page up, and I wasn't even going to try it.
Yeah.
It's like accents on letters and like M and an H next to each other. Like, what the hell is that?
Hey, M and H equals W, man. No, it's always fun. I mean, we were trying to come up with an idea that was like, well, what can we call this that isn't just old song, you know? And so I just, you know, kind of, we played around with the different, we were trying like old or ancient or some other synonym for old. And we just kind of settled on that one. You know, I have my Irish dictionary. it's right here. It sits here all day, and I, you know, but
open
but
it up to a random page and just start telling us words.
Do it.
Here's Fana. I just looked that up. It's like a ring, you know.
Oh,
so nice. I was looking that up for some. Something I was working on.
So this show is educational when we can.
Yeah. On fun. Yeah.
Like drop an ear, you know?
First, I thought you were talking about like animals, like fauna. Like, you know.
Oh, fauna, flora, and flora.
Yeah. It's like, oh, we're getting ecological.
Yeah.
And you said the Pillars of Eternity song. Masha, you set that up?
Yeah.
How did you go about getting that work set up?
I've just been friends with Justin for a few years, and I talked to him at GDC. I'm like, hey, you know, it'd be cool to do this. And he said, yeah, because they wanted to get, like, real tavern music in the game. So he approached me about it, and I was like, yeah, we're on board.
Mm-hmm. That's really cool.
Yeah. She has friends in high places, and and I have friends of people in high places.
We should totally do some stuff.
How can I exploit those connections?
You must recite all of Ian's Irish dictionary.
Oh, yeah, that ain't happening. Never mind.
Yeah.
I'll just keep inviting Josh on the show instead.
ask and you shall receive.
So what other fun stuff is in the works with the Travelers?
Nothing we can really talk about too much.
Well, I mean, we did do the Final Fantasy 30th anniversary video thing, and they plopped our video up on the front page. So speaking of more videos that we're trying to do, but we arranged the main theme, and it made the front page, and we'll just see what happens come the release of their video, you know, if we make it in or not, but hopefully we will.
That's really cool that these companies are giving you guys such a big spotlight.
I mean, I think what it really is if you are passionate about something and you're willing to put in the effort to make it happen and to make it good, you know, people really take notice of it. And that's, you know, that's what I noticed, at least with this last video. Because, I mean, you never know. I mean, who knows how many people are entering this thing? You know, they could have 50 submissions. They could have 5,000 submissions. I have no idea. But, you know, I think that if you make something and it's not just, you know, I plop myself down on the couch and kind of faked my way through the main theme on guitar, you know, we did. Well, we had a. Oh, sorry. Go on.
Oh, go ahead.
No, go on.
Oh, well, thank you. I was going to say, like, since you did the arrangement for that, and it's really nice. I love I don't think as many times as I've heard that, I think it's truly unique. And I think that's the point I was going to make, actually, because even if it's totally unrelated to music, I went to culinary school, and one thing, one of the chefs who, like, he knew Julia Child the last 16 years of her life, ate food in her kitchen, you know, all this stuff. And he told me it, he says, whether it's food or whatever you're pursuing, it's always about being different and better. And I think that with that arrangement in particular, it's been done so many times, and with how many, you know, submissions they had, it's important to kind of stick out. But if you're going to do the same theme, you might as well do it better and different. So rather than retread, you know, oh, another orchestral arrangement of the main theme, you know, it's, and we brought something really unique to that. And Ian's Chocobo shirt was just the icing on the cake there. Yeah.
Well, that's actually from, I don't know if you're familiar with Lauren the Flute.
Yeah.
She plays the flute. She's a fantastic singer. But it's actually, I believe it's her design. I love that shirt. I wear it all the time, and people are like, oh yeah, Chocobo's Final Fantasy, and you know, it's cool to make that connection with kind of like random people, even if it's only fleeting, you know. Mm-hmm. And actually wearing that shirt, and then her band is called The Returners, the Final Fantasy VI reference, but you know, wearing both of those shirts to MagWest in August was really actually kind of a fun way to start up conversations with people, because they're like, oh, I love the Returners, you know, or, you know, oh yeah, Lord and the Flute. And then you just start talking about something completely different, but it was really a cool way to connect with a lot of people. And, you know, I went there equipped with a bunch of Travelers download codes. So I'd just be like, oh yeah, I'm in this folk group. Do you like folk music? You know, like, you know, do you like music from around the world? And so I just, you know, hand those out to people, and it was cool. And then watching the downloads come in on Bandcamp, I'd be like, yes, this is actually, you know, a very cool thing.
That sounds like a fantastic pickup line, by the way. Do you like folk music?
Do you like folk music?
Man, that's like aggressively hipster.
I hope I didn't come across that way. As like certainly not the vibe I was going for.
Do you want to just go get? Do you want to get an espresso and smoke some weed? You know, Sorry, was I not supposed to mention weed at all? I don't do that. But
does the mandolin turn you on?
Oh. Oh. Well, wait till you hear the hurdy.
I hope not. But
sounds like a horrible Tinder profile. Oh,
I know. So cringy.
No.
Oh.
All you need to do is add, like, and I live in my mother's basement at the end. That's awful.
Okay, now someone needs to make this Tinder profile and see if it gets any swipes at all.
No, we should just make one for Travelers.
Yeah. We travel everywhere.
Yeah.
Yeah, I bet we'll get a lot of hits there. But, you know, I think Tinder's more adult, isn't it?
I've never used it before. I have no idea.
But, I mean, I don't know either. I'm just saying that I've heard people talk about it, you know, and yeah, I'm going to stop there before it gets a little creepy. So
I've never done the Tinder thing myself, mainly because, you know, I've been married for many, many years, but, yeah, we met on MySpace. So I'm dating myself a little bit there.
Wow.
Yeah. Tom hooked us up.
I miss MySpace.
Man,
no, you don't. Nobody misses MySpace.
Except James Taylor. Have you ever seen that movie with Adam Sandler? I think it's Funny People.
Oh, God, yeah. Oh, shit. I forgot about that movie.
Yeah, where he like, totally disses him, and Tom's there. But, yeah, that was like, a thing. I was on MySpace for, like, a week, and then Facebook came out, and I did that. So.
Yeah, I was on MySpace all through high school. Because there wasn't Facebook
yeah.
back then.
It was all about MySpace and AIM. game. Which is dying soon as well.
yeah, that's kind of, you know, a wake-up call on, you know, how old you are, right? Like,
Yeah, I don't know, man. I could date myself back to ICQ days. Remember ICQ?
Oh, yes.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, wow.
The dark days of dial-up internet.
Oh, my God, AOL. Oh.
I had MSN. MSN internet.
Why?
I because I'm in the country. I mean, the only way we get communication is if we rub two sticks together and have a blanket do the smoke signals.
Still use messenger pigeons.
Yeah, that's with the string tied
until we stop using those because, you know, the rednecks would shoot them down and eat them. So
I'm sorry.
So you know,
yeah.
I thought you were saying they would shoot down and eat the cans with the strings for a second.
Oh, no.
Oh, man.
But, you know.
Oh, Lord. So, jumping back a little bit with this music video, what was it that you guys entered? Is this like a contest that Square's doing, or is it just like a fan submission kind of deal?
So basically what it is they're taking soliciting a bunch of fan videos, and it can either be a music-based thing or an art-based thing or both. And they're going to take, I believe they're taking 30 of the videos and editing them together into this sort of like fan tribute to Final Fantasy because the original one came out in 1987 and it's 2017, so 30th anniversary. Other than that, I'm not really sure what the details are. But you know, it was sort of an invitation to do this arrangement and then, you know, kind of go out all out. Like, how many people can we get involved without it being too saturated? How many different videos can we get going? And so that was a lot of fun for me, just trying to think of like a good way to arrange it, you know, so it's not too busy. Because I don't think they'd pick something that's too busy, but also something that's kind of, you know, interesting. That's not just like faces on a screen. So yeah, but I think they're just taking 30 of the videos and editing them together, and then they will post a video at some point.
Are they giving prizes to the people selected or anything, or is it just like, hey, you're in a official Square video?
I mean, that's the prize is being in the video.
It's still a pretty awesome prize.
Oh yeah, I mean, I'd prefer that to getting a poster or something, you know.
I don't know. Posters are pretty cool.
I believe Uematsu chooses them himself. I believe.
Oh, he does. Oh, wow. Yeah, okay.
I think he picks them. I don't know. I would assume if he did a video inviting everybody to do it. And then he kind of gave like a synopsis on how he, you know, did it, how he wrote it. But yeah, I mean, it's like the prelude theme, you know, I think he said he wrote it in like 10 minutes, you know, yeah. All it is arpeggios, you know?
Yeah.
But it's like something so simple and you can't get away with that now. It's like, you know, it's all that stuff's already been done. It's really hard to, I think it's really hard to be original these days in music. So, I feel like the best days of music were the 60s and 70s, which I wasn't alive then to experience it firsthand. but you know, I feel like that was when music was really good. And then we somehow lost it in the 90s. And the
2000s. Are you shit talking grunge? I'll punch you if you're shit talking grunge.
We'll just skip that.
You're getting all hipster, like, oh, the 60s music was it was obviously of higher quality than the filthy grunge of the 90s.
Well, I mean, it's no Beatles. It's, you know, I mean, they kind
I'm
of.
Sorry,
like,
the only artist with a B I listen to is Beethoven and Bach.
Oh, they. Jeez.
What about Bartok, you know?
Berlioz. Oh,
Berlioz, yes.
Brahms.
Yeah.
Man, there's a lot of B's out there, huh?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
So you guys mentioned Mag West earlier. Are any of you attending Mag Fest in January?
I'm broke, so I can't.
Yeah, I'll be on the channel, so that'll be fun.
So anybody listening, please buy more albums so we can all go to Mag Fest.
Yeah.
Yeah, send me to MagFest so we can make a performance happen. So, but yeah, we're actually making a priority because I'll be moving eventually to the West Coast and the Portland area. So our next move after that would be to try to get, you know, to perform at MagWest and to do live shows. That's always been the ultimate goal. I feel like we're a little closer to that than we were a year ago.
Definitely.
But yeah, I mean, it all depends on, you know, fan support. That's like 99% of it right there. But, the funding we get, I'd like to say, you know, we put a lot of, you know, we put a lot of it back. You know, obviously we're musicians, so we, you know, need the income for ourselves, but for the most part, we reinvest that, wholeheartedly into our product. And, but yeah, we plan on going to, I know, Ian, are you going to MagFest?
Well, I regged, you know, the second reg opened, and got my registration, and you know, the second the hotel booking opened, I was right on that, and I didn't, you know, they did the whole random thing.
I got a hotel if you need a spot.
Well, I actually ended up getting a hotel. It's just far away. It's far away as in it's not the host hotel, but it's
in
not
West
really.
Virginia.
Well, no. I mean, it's in Virginia, but,
Yeah, but yeah, I have a spot if you want one.
Oh,
it's like
thanks.
At the main hotel. Yeah,
really?
I could probably drive from Indiana.
Oh, well, you know, I'll buy into a spot at the main hotel. Do you have any roommates yet?
Yeah, or? Kevin and my fiance.
Oh, okay, so cool people. Yeah.
Yeah, cool people.
Yeah, well, I mean, on a podcast, right? we'll talk afterwards. But thank you.
All right, well,
you know,
I'll be home. Just, you know, sad.
You don't want to be the one left out. I mean, I'll be there. Yeah. Masha's gonna be there. Ian's gonna be there.
Yeah.
You can't be the odd one out, man. You gotta get there.
Yeah.
Well, you know, my wedding's been
cut
more
the
of a
shit,
priority.
Josh, and get there.
So, but
get I'll, married I'll, at MagFest.
Yeah, there you go.
There, yeah. That'd be a cool idea.
Right? Yeah, we were performing, and then we'll just stop playing, and then
you could then play your own wedding.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, you could.
No, I do plan on taking her to our, you know, whatever when it is our first MagFest, she'll go, and she already said she would. So she's very, very supportive of my career. I'm very, very lucky that she is. I've had relationships in the past where like, you need to quit that. That's not going anywhere. And then I'm like, you need to quit and get out, you know. but no, I didn't actually quite put it like that. But it was, you know, it's nice when you have a significant other that supports you and that's very important, because I think as artists we like people to enable, you know, our passion. So, but yeah,
very true. Masha, you said you'll be there and you're doing a panel. You said,
yeah. With a bunch of other game orchestra people, and we're going to be analyzing different video game tracks, and I'm going to actually be talking about Hikari, so that's going to be super fun.
Nice.
Nice.
Yeah.
I might have to actually try getting to a panel for once this year.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
It's been a few years since I've actually done a panel. Like, at MagFest every year, I'll go and watch, like, one or two concerts, and that's about it, and I'll just dick around the rest of the time.
Are the one-ups, I'm going to assume the one-ups are going this year. I would think.
I don't think so. I know Lonely Rolling Stars is going to be there, which I'm friggin' excited about. I am so happy to see Lonely Rolling Stars again.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, they because I don't know what the one ups are doing. I know Mustin now takes like a more producer role with them. Because I think when I asked him, he said that the last one they did, he really didn't have much in it. He really wasn't part of it.
Yeah, I know he quit the band for a while. I think he's back in unless he re-quit again.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. He's wishy-washy, I guess. Can't make up his mind. Create a band, leave a band, go back to the band. What are you going to do?
I definitely don't plan to quit Travelers. So
yeah, me either.
Yeah, same so. Here. No reason.
I think the three of us are a pretty good production team.
Yeah.
We work really well together. I'm highly disorganized, and the two of you know, Ian and Masha are really organized, so they make up for my disorganization and chaos. So
hey, whatever works, right?
Yeah. I mean it does work. I wish I could pronounce our artist's actual like artist name, because I don't know if she wants us to say her first name. but she did a really good job with our art and everything. And then we've got John Montoya, who does our mastering, and he's really done a good job of making it sound like very rustic, I think. But yeah, as far as our production team, I really like how everybody, you know, works. I think we gel well, you know, so.
Oh, man. Yeah. Well, I can't have people on without asking this. What games are you playing, or what games are you excited about coming up?
I'll let one of you two go first. I've been talking a lot.
Well, I actually am completing a playthrough of Secret of Mana. And I'm excited for the new one to come out. I don't actually know if I have a system that will run it, because I'm not quite sure what it's coming out for. The remake, I know, should
PS4 and possibly PC. I think it's dumb that Square limits their stuff to single platforms, but whatever.
I think it might be on Switch as well.
Oh, okay. Well, I mean, if it comes out on Mac OS, I'm down. I have a PS3 and Mac, so.
I don't think the remake's going to be on the Switch, because in Japan they have the collection on the Switch.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Yeah, I think the remake console-wise is only PS4.
Yeah. But that's for me at least. I mean, I've been loving that. I'm going to start in on Seiken Densetsu 3, which didn't come out in the States. It was a Japan-only release. In the same universe as Secret of Mana, Legend of Mana.
Yeah.
You know, but...
Gotta get that fan translation.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. Or I mean, in my case, probably just hack through the Japanese, but, you know, keeps me alive or something. Keeps my brain alive, I guess. I don't know.
You better switch that Irish dictionary out for a Japanese
one. Yeah.
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 So, Secret of Mana, are you playing on like a Super Nintendo cart emulation, like on a Wii, or did you pick up an SNES Classic?
No, that was impossible to get. No, I mean, I've just, you know, I've been emulating stuff. I mean,
filthy pirate! Whoa.
Oh man!
But I do own the original game. Like I, you know, I got it as a kid. And nice played save. Through it as a kid, so I have the cart somewhere. I don't know where it is, but I know I have the cart, and I certainly have the SNES. You know, so I actually
too lazy to hook it up.
Well, yeah, I actually think that's one of the ones I own in Japanese as well.
Oh, wow.
But the Super Famicom cartridge. But yeah.
See, now all you gotta do is track down an SNES Classic, hack it, and get Seiken Densetsu 3 on that and play it that way.
Oh, I've got one, actually. That's one of the advantage. Yeah, that's one of the advantages of working where I do. I have to wait 24 hours before I can purchase something, but then I end up getting one just by sheer luck. There was like three left, and I was like, I'm putting it on layaway.
Nice.
And I'm like the jerk that put it on layaway for $10. I haven't made one single payment on it, and I'm gonna. It's just sitting there for people to look at. but it's also because I haven't put any money on it because I've poured everything into my wedding, but it will be bought before Christmas. And
it's $80. Find that. How long does it take to pay that on?
$5 a week. but I was really shocked they didn't put Chrono Trigger on there. It blew my mind. I was like, I'll just not take Star Fox 2 and just give me Chrono Trigger. You know? I'm not a Star Fox guy.
I would have left the original Star Fox off, give us Star Fox 2 and throw Chrono Trigger on there.
Yeah.
There I was personally hoping that they would throw something like Terranigma on there that was never released in the US.
Oh, yeah.
So, I don't know. What about you, Masha? What are you playing?
I've actually been playing a lot of Diablo 3. Surprisingly.
Nice.
Yeah, I've gotten back into it. It's really fun. There are actually things to do now.
I'm excited to fire that one up. I know that is getting, I think, a 4K or some kind of enhanced version on the Xbox One X. So I want to see how pretty that looks.
Yeah, I played it on PS4 and it looks great.
I wish they'd do that with Diablo 2. Like just.
Yeah, they might. They might soon, like a remaster.
Yeah, because Diablo 2, in my opinion, was like the best one. Diablo 1 was okay, but it was like, you know, you're just going in a dungeon all the way down to hell. And it's like, you know, you see so many stone corridors and caverns and stuff, it gets kind of boring. But I did like 2 for that. But yeah, but 3 is a good choice. Have you played a Necromancer yet?
Yeah, it's really fun because I love Necromancer in 2, so that's why I'm like, oh man, I have to do it, you know?
I think it's the same one, story-wise, right?
So that's been cool. And then I actually have been playing the new Taiko Drum Master because my friends and I imported the Japanese controller and everything for PS4. Wow. That's been so fun. Yeah, it's so good.
Do you know if they're bringing that to America at all?
I think they are, but it's going to be a long time from now, so.
They'll probably put some shitty American music on there, too.
Yeah, I had the PS2 version, and it had, like, Britney Spears, you know, all the classics.
Oh, wow.
Britney Spears on Taiko, the classic.
Yeah.
I don't think anything could be as bad as the Ondon games coming over as Elite Beat Agents with, like, friggin' Cher. Like, come on.
Oh, man.
Cher.
Come
Madonna?
On.
Psycho, yeah, they had Madonna.
Wow. Man.
Okay. What about you, Josh? What are you playing?
You're
not playing SNES Classic.
Yeah, that's true. One thing I'm really excited for, and I don't even have the console. I did, but I had to sell it. Is Octopath Traveler. I'm really, really super excited about it. I love the music of it. And it's shocking because the guys, the person's like new. This is their first game score. They've been like a sound designer, which, you know, before. It just really looks original because I like the whole high def, two-dimensional look of it, but it's still kind of 3D.
Yeah.
It's very unique looking. But that's one I'm looking forward to. The one I'm playing right now is I've been playing a heck of a lot of Battlefield 1. I love that game. I would play World War 2 from Call of Duty, but I'm so like Call of Duty'd out that every single one of them is just, it's like the same no matter what setting you put it in. You don't have to have skill to play this, you know? You just run and shoot things. You don't even get to scale anything. Like you can't, there's no height to combat. You can't climb over crates or anything like that. Titanfall 2 did it really well where you could like climb literally on the top of a building and, just look at everybody like, you know, as they're like really tiny running around the street level.
Yeah.
So, but, um, But I play that, and I've been playing Divinity Original Sin. That's another really good RPG. If you haven't played it, highly recommended. Because you can play multiplayer, two-player co-op, and the new one actually does four-player co-op, and you can do like a dungeon master mode where you can actually make your own levels and edit everything on the fly. So, and you can give the players options to, like, Baldur's Gate, where it's like, do you kick open the door and it shows you like a little hand-drawn picture there? You can edit all those options. But the Divinity actually has like this really cool thing where you can play two player and you don't even have to be in the same area. And when you do conversations and quests, your other player will get all the experience and stuff associated, but the dialogue options they can't do if they're not there. So like the story will continually progress, and if you're both there, then you get to dispute. You can play rock, paper, scissors to see who actually gets to choose the dialogue option. And you can actually romance the other player too. So,
wow.
Because you get your own dialogue options between you both. So it's pretty neat. It's an interesting one RPG that I've never really experienced the amount of choice that you get and the amount of control you have over the game's narrative. It's really interesting. So
it's pretty cool,
especially if you love those top-down RPGs like Baldur's Gate. It's really nice. So that's it for me. Very
cool. I need to play the second one. It looks good, and I heard all the voice lines have VO too, which is incredible.
Yeah,
I'm hoping the second one hits console soon.
Oh yeah, it should.
Yeah, I think so. I think even Pillars is going on console.
Oh yeah, it's already there.
Yeah.
Yeah. Has all the DLC and everything, and I haven't played the DLC. I got caught up in making my fortress. And I'll admit I cheated. I got all the gold, bought all the stuff, and now I'm just going, I'm exploring the dungeon. That seems endless.
Yeah.
I fought like a shadow dragon at the bottom of it. So, and there's still levels to go. So,
man.
I'm wondering where I can go from like fighting a shadow dragon to fighting like a deity themselves. So I don't know.
I need to get back into that game. I have not played nearly enough of it. There's just too much stuff coming out. Can't keep up with it all.
I know.
Yeah, there's
ridiculous.
There's so much out there.
Too much. Well, and
PlayStation's getting a lot of really cool exclusives.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting Days Gone, which I really want to play, and then Beyond Human, Detroit looked really neat from the makers of Heavy Rain.
I don't know. David Cage has never done it for me, so Detroit's doing nothing. And I was last year at E3, I thought Days Gone looked great, and then this year at E3, I thought it looked terrible.
Oh, really?
I thought it looked so generic this year. It was like Tomb Raider with zombies. It did nothing for me this year. And I was so hyped up about it last year when they first revealed it. It just, I don't know. I don't know if they changed direction with it or if they're just getting lazy. I don't know. It just looks like another Sony action game. They all just blend together for me anymore.
Like Horizon Zero Dawn.
That's the one that looked different. Looks unique. God of War, I think, looks really good. But, I don't know. Days Gone, they lost me.
Now, see, I thought Xbox had some really good exclusives too. Like, The Last Night. It's like a Blade Runner-esque, cyberpunk sort of thing. And I really can't wait for CD Projekt Red Cyberpunk 2077.
Yeah, oh my God. I'm so excited for that one.
Yeah. They haven't showed anything about that yet, except one trailer. But I mean, are we going to get Cyberpunk Geralt?
That would be fun. I would be down for that.
Yeah, I don't think. And you know what really saddens me is if they do make a Witcher 4, it's not going to be him, which you know kind of sucks.
Yeah, it'll be okay though. Like, what if we get to be Witchers? Like, that'll be fun.
Yeah, that would be cool. Yeah.
I'm into that. I mean, I went to Witcher school. Like, I know.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. That looked awesome, by the way.
It was so fun. That was, like, the best thing I've ever done in my life. That LARP. Oh, my God.
Did anybody die from the Trial of the Grasses?
No, but some people decided to be blue stripes instead of witchers.
Oh, really? Oh,
yeah. Cool. Yeah.
So that you didn't get to meet Geralt at all?
No, because it's set 200 years before. That's why there's so many witchers.
Gotcha. Yeah, I still haven't beaten that game. There's just so many quests. I get overwhelmed.
Does it have an ending? I thought it just went on forever.
No.
I wish.
It just feels like it because there's just so much to do.
Velen alone is massive.
Yeah. I still have quests. Oh my god.
Yeah, I just pursued the main quest and I'm in Skellige now. So, and it's just like, well, I could go back to Velen, I guess.
That's another one I'm excited to check out again when the Xbox One X patch or update or whatever hits. Gotta get that 4K goodness.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I know we've been chatting for quite a while. Was there anything else about the album or about Travelers or anything else that you guys want to discuss before we wrap up?
No.
Well, I'd like to encourage everyone, if you haven't already made your way over to our YouTube page, to check that out. Because we do have, now we have, what, 4 music videos?
Yeah.
Up there. So, yeah. So definitely check it out. We're just the Travelers VGM on YouTube. And you can search for various things. We've got Song of Time. We've got Shipel from the first album up, Song of Time from Ode to the Lovers. And then we also have Aran Arsa, which is the old song from Pillars of Eternity. And then most recently, the main theme, which I would highly encourage you to check out.
Yeah. More videos coming soon. Yay.
Yeah, more videos coming soon. We've got some stuff in the works. We can't talk about it, but
we need to do one for Last Battle, but like I know we can't get everybody to play, so we need to do an animation for that.
Yeah, that would be so cool.
That would be really cool.
And also, for anybody that is listening or interested in trying us out, if you hear our music and you like it and you want to see maybe a track that we haven't done from a game series that you really like, let us know on Twitter, Facebook, or comment in the YouTube videos in the comments section and let us know what you would like to see. We want to make albums for the fans, and we don't want to just always decide, you know, what we're doing all the time. So, I always believe in making a product that people want to see, you know, not like Ubisoft that clearly knows the fans want to do a feudal Japan Assassin's Creed and they're not doing it.
That's why we made Travelers, you know, because people liked all the other folk albums that were out there and, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Millennial Fair, big example right there.
Yeah,
so, true.
We just want to create a high quality product that that everybody enjoys, and I think we did a pretty good job of that. I think that our team rises to the occasion every time. So give us a chance.
Yeah, check out our Bandcamp.
Yeah, that too.
Sounds good. Bandcamp link will be in the show notes below the video if you're watching that or wherever the hell you found this. They're somewhere. You'll find them. Very easy to find. But it's been fantastic having the three of you on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thanks for having us back. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah.
So that is it for this episode. Josh, Ian, Masha, thank you again for coming on and chatting about the Travelers. We'll be playing some of your music to wind things up. But Masha, since you're the new one, do you have any final words to end this episode?
I just want to say thanks again for having us, and I hope you enjoy our new videos, and there will be more soon. We're super excited. Like you said, like any feedback you want to leave us and comments is appreciated, because we want to make music for you. Yeah. Thanks, everybody.